Tonight is actually two classes combined into one. We've got a lot of information to cover. And tonight's discussion is really a follow-on from last week. And that is, but it's its own thing, title being, Is It Love or Is It Obsession? That is the discussion tonight. And that class actually is going to be divided into two sections. We're going to start with the obsession, and then we're going to move on to the love. So if you leave halfway, you are going to be depressed. So I advise you, if you can, just to stick it out to the end, because we start with the bad news, and then we get to the way it's maybe being done. A lot of you here tonight, as Jews, you're going to feel like you're actually a victim of all of it, obviously. But that's not the case. Everything I'm describing this evening, you will have, I'm sure, have feelings of. If you've been in a long relationship, which ended up breaking off, you're definitely going to be able to relate to a lot of it. There's worse cases and better cases. But we're going to eventually move on to a healthy relationship and how it's meant to be formed. Because the idea of this course was meant to be, how do we create healthy, lifelong relationships? That's the idea. Now, I will be using the male-female relationship this evening as the prototype, but it's going to apply to all relationships that we're in. Because when we work with people, employee relationships, as I said last week, is also a relationship. And we have children, that's also a relationship. Ultimately, everything we do in life, unless you sit by yourself at home with a computer, not speaking to anyone at all, your life is a relationship. And actually, Judaism, as I've said before, is not a religion. It is a relationship. That's why Rabbi is broaching this topic this evening. Okay? So let's start with the obsessive infatuation relationship, which, as I said, about 90% of my job here at the JC is talking to people about relationships. Obviously, that's what I do most of my time. Whether people come with questions or I nag people to get married or break up. I was with someone yesterday who I married, and I was talking very strongly to getting a divorce, which would have been a mitzvah for her if she could pluck up the courage to do it. So I'm not just here to put people together. The relationship has to be right, and that's a lot of time and effort. Let's start with what a relationship is not meant to be, which is not going to apply to anyone here. Let's just do it theoretically. And that is, what are some of the symptoms of a disease which I call obsessive infatuation, drama-laden relationships? So let's start with the very good dictionary definition of this. And if you type into Webster's dictionary obsession, you end up with the following description. Obsession is the domination of one's thoughts and feelings by a persistent idea, image, or design. It doesn't have to involve people per se. It can involve an idea, a thought, a concept, a cult, for example, a pop figure, a sports figure. These two could be obsessive. In a relationship, however, which we'll be focusing on this evening, obsession is when a person is dependent upon, enmeshed with, a great word I use a lot, and compulsively focused on taking care of another person. Okay? That's pretty much how a perfect description of what an unhealthy and obsessive relationship is really all about. So the question is, why do people have this? Why can't we all start dating at 21 or 22, whenever we start dating, or 18, just have the perfect person, have the perfect relationship, always loving, always giving, always sweet, always kind, and we date for 6 months, maybe a year, we get engaged, and we get married. Wouldn't that be nice? And not only that, stay married. What happens? How does it all screw up that we end up in our mid to late 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s, still in these crazy, dramatic, unfortunate, train crash, car accident relationships that we can't get out of, and, this is going to be a big one this evening, we keep repeating. How many times have people say to me, I keep having bad relationships. I keep dating guys who are just really terrible. So I'm like, well, let's think about it. You've dated 5 guys, all been terrible, all of them. So what relates to them? Did they know each other? No. So they weren't actually like planning, like destroying your life, were they? No. So the only thing that connected all those 5 was you. It's a painful thing to hear. But really, maybe we are creating this own unhealthy reality of our own. So why do people have this obsession? Why can't we just get involved in a nice relationship? Everything works out, we date, we get married, we have the engagement party, the in-laws love us, the parents love us, wouldn't that be nice? It doesn't work that way. So there's many theories of this. I'm going to present one which I feel from my readings, and if you want, I have a very good reading list. At the end, those who are interested, and to further reading for this, which, by the way, for many couples about to get married, I do recommend. And there seems to be an internal pain of failure of relationship with self. In other words, it's all about you. It's not about the other person. You can blame the other person for all the problems of the relationship, but ultimately, the responsibility and the failure ends with you. Usually goes back, I'm not a therapist, usually goes back to some unhealed pain from childhood, some feeling of being left alone, abandoned. If you all close our eyes and think for a moment of feeling abandoned as a child and how that felt, that's not such a nice thing. I had a guy call me up today, and he called me up, named Brian. No one knows him, it's okay. And he said, you know, I came home from work, and this is what he said to me. These exact words, and it really struck me based upon this. He said, I felt like I was 10 years old, and I came back home, and my mother wasn't there. You know that feeling when you came home? It didn't happen too often, hopefully, for most healthy families. You know that empty void, that piece of you in your stomach that was missing? Well, that's a hole that's created, which parents, in the discussion, are always trying to make sure their kids have and are always filled in. Because we all want to create young children with good, healthy self-esteem. How we do that is not for now. But that's what we're looking for. But we are the victims of chronic low self-esteem. And these feelings of abandonment stay with us. So when we get older and we start to get back into relationships, because the last major relationship we had, which sometimes had difficulties, was relationship with our parents. When we get older, we start to find someone to come along and to fix and heal that relationship. Meaning we're actually going into relationships thinking that this guy or this girl is going to come along and make me better. Fill me up. Because I'm missing something. And I need you to come along and make my life better. And a good relationship is all about you making me feel better about myself. We're kind of not dating each other. We're trying to date our mothers or our fathers, which sounds pretty sick, but that's pretty much how psychologists understand it, which is why all these Jews go to therapy. And their parents have been dead for many years. And what's the first thing that a therapist asks you? They're like, so, how was your childhood? My childhood? I said, my boss hates me. My wife wants to kick me out. My kids think I'm a bum. You know, it's my parents. They've been dead for 20 years. No, it's all about the parents. It's all about those feelings that were generated as children that have existed inside. And then we're going to do a whole class in 2 weeks' time, the final class on parents and brothers and sisters. And and in-laws as well, going to be a major one. But we're going to spend time on that alone. Right now, I'm going to focus on self and see what mistakes we make. And by the way, these mistakes are fixable. Everything I'm telling you this evening is fixable. And it's not so difficult, by the way, to kind of see the signs and fix it up. So here's the problem. With this kind of like hole that's missing in all of us, that I want someone else to come along and fill and make me feel good, which isn't how we describe relationships. How's this girl doing? Yeah, she makes me feel good. Right? How's the guy? Yeah, he's nice, treats me well, he makes a good salary, he's got a good job. And that's how we describe the person we're with, which is basically they make me feel, yeah, he's nice to me, he's cute to me, he's good to me. That's how we describe it. Which actually we're going to see is the exact opposite. A 180 from where a relationship and loving and relationship is meant to be, especially marriage. So everyone really is looking for that person in a relationship, and it could be a job as well, and it could be children, all the rest of it. It's going to make, by the way, people do this to their kids as well. They try to make their child into the person that's going to make their life right. Yeah, you know, make a kid into the super sports star, or make a kid into the super musician, or make a kid into this or that, and they push their kids. Right, I came to this country, I started seeing, observing this disease called Little League. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. But have you seen the parents in the stands when they shout and get into fist fights? Sorry, could that be one of the ECs on? I'm getting heated up now. You've got me going now. And they're fighting in the stands? It's like, he's 7 years old, give him a chance, give him a break. No, because I'm making my child into the person. That's called an unhealthy relationship with my child. It's the same thing. Relationships are all relationships. It's the same thing. Okay? So we're all trying to find that person who's going to fill the gaping emptiness that has kind of existed in my stomach. And people choose various people. They'll choose their children. They'll choose a counselor, a rabbi, a guru, a teacher, a professor, social worker, employer, employee, will always use certain people to come and fill that role. This evening I want to show you it doesn't have to be that way. I call this the Prince Charming Syndrome. Now think back to your childhood. Does everyone remember the story of Sleeping Beauty? Right? This actually is a terrible story to tell your children, especially your daughters. And let me explain why. Sorry to blow away all these myths, right? It's such a cute movie. Everyone's seen this movie, by the way? You know the idea? Well, the premise is fairly simple. We have a girl, a young, beautiful woman, obviously. She's got the long blonde hair and the perfect image and the perfect size and all the rest of it. And for some reason, she eats something, I believe. I'm going back. I haven't read this, seen the movie in at least 2 weeks. And she goes back and she eats something which puts her into a certain trance. She's like in a semi-comatose state, and she's there on the slab, and now she needs to get out of it. It's actually a very sick thing if you really analyze what it is, and this is what we're feeding our kids. And what happens? Along comes Prince Charming. He's not Prince Nice Character. He's not Prince Good Mido, good character, right? He's Prince Charming. And he's got charm. He could be an absolute bum, but he's charming. He comes in. Right, with the perfect, you know, the hair and the helmet, he's got the perfect body, he's got the dimple in his chin, he can sharpen a pencil in, right? And he comes on his big white steed, and he jumps off his horse, and there he sees her, helpless. And he's going to save her and rescue her. And he gets off the horse, and how does he do it? Does he talk to her? Does he discuss? Tell me about your problems. Right? Does he offer CPR? Because she's had poison. By the way, if I have had poison, someone please like call 911. Someone drives into a horse, just shoo him away. Right? I want to take him straight to the hospital, right? And he comes in and he dismounts. And what does he do? And remember? You girls, you remember. What does he do? He kisses her. He kisses her. And what happens? She comes out of this semi-comatose state. And she's out, and they ride off into the sunset. Which really is a really sick story to sell children. Because I think I'm overdoing it a little bit, but all the stories we really tell our children are based upon these concepts. And by the way, it's also very offensive to women, right? I mean, I ain't no feminist, I'll be honest with you, but come on. And in other words, don't worry. You woman, you're not going to get this. Don't think about it, because you're pretty much out of it. When it comes to relationships, just put yourself out into a coma, which for many guys I know probably be helpful if the girls were half asleep, to be honest with you. I actually appreciate them. But you're out of it, but don't worry. What's going to fix this all? A big, wet, sloppy kiss. And it's all going to be fine. Right. Now, this may sound a little bit childish to you, but that's really what we're doing. Now, men are the same thing, but it's a different image, because obviously men and women are different. Men are looking for the perfect woman who is going to fix their life and give them. They have different needs to women. Basically, men are looking for the perfect woman who's going to constantly compliment them and stroke their egos. Because as we described before, men are walking egos who need validation and affirmation for absolutely everything they do, wear, and see. As I always tell people, and it may not be nice to hear this, but many women will dress in order to look attractive. We all will hopefully dress to look attractive for their husbands or their mates. And men dress because they want everyone else to say, you're a good dresser. I mean, I'm one of those people. Everyone knows my motto, think Yiddish, dress British. Something I live by. Yeah, it's definitely who I am. But that's who we are. Right? And we're looking for that person who's going to fill in that void and always make me feel good. And if you argue with me and if you come against me, it's not right. Constant validation. Now tell me, of all the guys you've seen out there in relationships, and all the girls you may have dated or seen other people dating, can anyone really fulfill that image? Is there ever going to be the perfect Prince Charming? Is there ever going to be the perfect Barbie doll? I may have mentioned this story before, I'll mention it again, of a guy who once came to me. I said, so what are you looking for in a girl? He said, I want someone who's sweet, constantly loving, always giving, never losing her temper, always there for me. When I come in, she just is happy to see me. I'm like, you don't want a wife, you want a cat. It's not possible. What are you looking for? That's not natural. But that's the image we've had. And it goes back, really back to who we are. So an obsessive relationship, based upon that background, has three characteristics. And again, don't freak out. People get very, very worried, because you're going to hear yourself for sure in at least one of all these three, and some of you that I know in all of them, and some of you deserve it, but that's okay. So an obsessive relationship has three characteristics. And number one, we assign, based upon this whole Prince Charming Superwoman thing, too much time and value to our partners. Okay? We kind of build this image of what our partner should be. I was on the phone today, this is a true story, I promise you, with a lovely young man who I adore, and he was dating someone for a while. And for him, the challenge was, I'm just telling you what he said today, I'm not saying this is not my opinion, this doesn't represent anyone who works over here. For him, the challenge was that physically, there was, as he said, there were certain parts of her body he didn't agree with. Everything else was there, but that was missing. A lovely guy, successful every shape, way, shape, or form. Dating this girl for a long time. Why he didn't get this early in the relationship, I don't know. Right? What exactly happened, I'm not sure. But something like, there's certain, I'm not going to tell you the details, even I don't want to hear them at this point, but there's certain parts, and this is the disease, what I said to him. This is a challenge. This is something you're going to have to overcome, because there is in every other area, she was perfect. And he broke up with her. And now starting again. I can't make him change his mind. So what happened to me today? Okay. Too much time and value to a partner. Let's talk about that disproportionate amount of time. There's one thing I've noticed when it comes to relationships, and that's what we're talking, interpersonal relationships. And by the way, this is going to apply to all relationships. It can be work as well. Many people I know overwork. It's the same disease. Okay. Same idea that this job is going to fill me up, right? By playing tennis, by playing golf, whatever it is. They will give too much time to that thing. So in relationships, it happens like this. Many people start dating, and they'll come up to me and they'll say, I went on a date, and it was this guy, most amazing rabbi. No, this is different. Forget the 12 car crashes I've had with other guys. This is different. It's always different. This guy is different. He's the perfect guy. And the proof is, we spent the whole night talking. And then I got home, and the first thing I had to do was text him. And then he Facebooked me. And then I tweeted him back, and we're like backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards. And this week, I'm going to sleep 6 hours. Because I'm all, you know what goes through my head? I promise you, I don't say this usually because I'm upset. I'm like, oh, that's nice. In my head, I'm like, no chance. It's not going to happen. There's just no way. Because you've set the bar too high. That's not the way to begin a relationship. You can't just like run in there. It's like running a marathon before you even start training. Like, burger goes down and you're off. There's only one way after a relationship begins with such chronic intensity. And that's down. What's a better introduction? I met a guy last night. And he was okay. Kind of funny looking. He was okay. And he doesn't make as much money as I thought I want a guy to have. But you know... And he's kind of cute, and I'm debating whether I should date him again. I'm like, we're over the chance! This could actually go full season! This could actually make it to the end! Expectations are low, you're up! What a beautiful beginning to a relationship. I met him, and I thought he was a dork. Oh my goodness! Let's book a hopper right now! I'm ready to go! Shalom al Yisrael. Start the little tongues around, you know? Too much time and too much value. It's going to lead to eventual disappointment. Number two. That was number one. Assign too much time and value to a partner. Number two. Unrealistic expectations for unconditional positive love. Not too much to say about that, but too many expectations for unconditional love. Now, love we're going to talk about later, I promise you, but unconditional love and too much, it's only going to end up coming back to you. You can't force it. And number three, and this is actually very interesting, one thing I've noticed in people who are in an obsessive relationship is they neglect to care for themselves. People who start to neglect to care for themselves physically as well. They used to go to the gym all the time, for example, right here in New York, like 5 times a day. And then afterwards they give it up. Okay, eventually, something's got to change because you can't keep up the previous single lifestyle once you're in a serious relationship that you want to go places. There's no doubt about it. But when I see people start to become unhealthy physically and their work starts to taper off, these are signs that maybe the relationship is not so healthy. I'm going to go through what a typical obsessive relationship looks like in a second. But this is the background. That is definitely something. Neglection for oneself. Why? Because it's all about the other person and not about me. So I actually lose myself in that relationship. Okay? And basically there are two fears. There's a lot of fear that we have in relationships. Okay? And men have it chronically. And I mentioned it before. The two fears that we all have when we enter a relationship, no matter where you are, date one, date 15, right? Third year of marriage, same thing. There's a fear of abandonment. And there's a fear of intimacy. Right? Nobody wants to be abandoned. Which is why I found a very strange phenomenon among very, very amazing women who are very, very powerful and very strong. And when I say, you've been dating this guy for 3 years, why don't you bring up the idea you want to get married? I don't want to push him. I don't want to push him? I hear this all the time. I don't want to push him too much. You're living together now. Why? What's their fear? The fear is that if they end up bringing it, he's like, whoa. I'm just dating for 3 years and moving in with you. One second. Not talking about marriage over here. This is the old bait and switch. You can't do that to me. And they will be abandoned, which is a great shame. Because eventually their fears could come to fruition because they didn't push a little bit earlier. And a fear of intimacy, and this is more for men than for women. As I mentioned before, the word intimacy is a very, very good word. I think I mentioned this one of the classes before. Intimacy stands for inter-me-you-see. Intimacy is inter-me-you-see. And men have, all men have this to some degree. Right, we're all very, very scared and very low self-esteem. We're all still kids. And we want to be judged as being fantastic and very good looking, great sports people, great business people, make a lot of money. There's a lot of fear that comes with that. So we're scared to open ourselves up because once she sees who I'm really about, she's going to hate me. But what actually happens is when she knows what you're really about, she ends up liking you more. Like, oh, you're so cute, my little snuggy buggy, you know? Because now you know what this person's all about. Women actually like that stuff. But men close it off. I was dealing with a marriage this week. I'm not joking with you. A marriage this week, this couple had been married for a number of years, I won't say how many, but a number of years. And she said to me, we've never actually opened up to each other. The whole thing's a sham. Imagine that. Married. Living together, it looks like they're married, but constantly there's nothing there. It's a totally surface relationship. That's fear of intimacy. And possibly abandonment, but definitely intimacy. So basically there's 8 steps which I put together, which make up from my observation, from my reading of some wonderful books by some great writers out there, of what an obsessive relationship looks like. And it usually starts at point one, which is love at first sight. Usually how it begins in terms of an obsessive relationship. I see him, I see her. He's perfect. We're in the supermarket, we're the bar rabbi. Everything about him is perfect. Met him last night, he's the one. I'm like, the one for what? The one I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. Like, how do you know? I have a feeling in my stomach. That's last night's curry. How do you know? You had last night, an enchilada? What are you talking about? What, are you insane? Are you 18? Is this MTV reality crit? What are you talking about? What is this based upon? No, I just know it. And maybe you'll luck out. Hey, life's a lottery. Place your bets. Who knows? Maybe that this relationship that started, usually not. Two, fantasy is triggered. He moves into fantasy phase. She moves in. It's different, right? She's waiting for Prince Charming to come and sweep her off his feet, wake her up from her evil, drab, nasty New York, I'm now at college working and everything is miserable life. And he's looking for this girl who's going to come along and make him into the rock star, superstar, pop star, sports NFL leader that he's always wanted to be. And it's going to be fantastic. So the fantasy gets triggered and he becomes the knight in shining armor. She becomes the super female. And this secret rescuer that they always had in their minds from their childhood has now appeared on the scene. Now, who can live up to that? I don't know. Then the romance thing begins. Now, a little bit of Judaism right now, if you don't mind. People always say, I'm looking for something romantic. Romance, I don't know if it breaks down for you. I'm going to give you the good news soon. Romance is terrible. Oh, my God. You know, I always say, if there's no Hebrew word for something, that word, that concept doesn't exist. Okay, more about that later. But if there's no Hebrew word, that doesn't exist. What's the Hebrew word for romance? Any Israelis here? Romantica. Wonder where they got that one from. Romance, there's no word for it. But the idea of romance is, it's nothing there. It's all so bad. You get swept off my feet. Everything's fantastic. It's a form of obsessive relationship. Now, there is something good called love and enjoyment. There's lots of good things coming. But romance is not going to be it. And the problem is, the victim of this fantasy cannot live up to that romantic ideal. It's just not possible. Eventually, if it moves on, and it may break off at this stage, it could break off at any stage, but if it keeps going, this obsessive relationship turns into a person showing neediness, and they deny the idea of them being abandoned, right? Which they usually are. Now, there's another weird thing, and I haven't fully figured this one out, but something which I've observed again and again. For some people, they like to date, without realizing it, it's subconscious, they like to date people who are avoidance addicts. Some people will get into relationships specifically with people that they know are never going to be able to commit. Why? See a local Jewish psychiatrist or psychologist. I don't know. But it seems to be one of the things. And they'll deliberately date these people knowing full well that this person is not going to be able to commit. But I'm willing to invest myself into that relationship. And they'll make funny excuses in their minds. He deserves to have some time with his friends at the bar after work. Right? A parent says about their adult son, or someone say about their kid, or someone say about their husband, or their wife, or their parents even, makes no difference. Oh, they deserve it. They're in, as we say in the trade, denial, not just a river in Egypt. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Number five, if it keeps going, awareness of being abandoned, and eventually the denial starts to crumble. And that's when it gets very dramatic. Okay, now, let me be very clear about this. I've said this many times before, but if you hear me say this tonight, it was worth my mother having me. Drama in a relationship is not good. It may be good on reality TV, but drama in a relationship, any drama that occurs in a relationship, whether from your children, and kids are good at building up drama, oh my God, it's all over. My friend Shoshana didn't speak to me in school today. Right? Now, a bad parent would be like, oh my God! Oh my, that's it! We're changing school! I'm going to call my parents right now. Get Michelle's mother on the phone. Hello, Mrs. Cohen. I'm going to kick you off the... Right? What you're doing is you're feeding into the drama, right? Because everything for a child is majorly dramatic. Now, as a child, not being able to find your homework is major drama. My life is over. Now, for an adult, the same thing happens, but with adult versions. Oh, he didn't call me tonight. What does that mean? Does he love me? Does he hate me? Right? Oh, I didn't get a text message. Did he thank me for the date? Did I thank him? What did I say exactly? And we end up dramatizing every small occurrence. And by the way, we're great. I think this is a Jewish thing. We analyze every word we said on the date. Right? Every word that was uttered. Did I say the wrong thing? Did I cross my legs at the wrong time? When I yawned, did he think I was yawning at him? Or was I just tired? Like, you ever done that before? You break down every, like, scene by scene. And then when you're in the relationship, right, it becomes very, very volatile. You don't want that. You want calm. Oh, Shoshana, to speak to you? She had a bad day. That's called good parenting. Me, I'm like, whoa, I'm kicking Shoshana's arse tuchus. Right, that guy's going down. Right? But that's not the way to be. You're going to be calm and quash all drama. Reality TV, let them be dramatic. They're on the Jersey Shore. They're okay. Let them go crazy, throw plates and pots at each other. That's good. Not for us. Keep it calm. Obsessive relationships, by definition, usually have lots and lots of drama involved. Eventually, the person enters withdrawal. They pull back. You know that feeling from the relationship? You start pulling back. You don't call, you don't text. You go to the opposite extreme, also extremist. Eventually, now here we start to get to like illegal territory. It gets difficult now. Because now this person obsesses how to get even with their partner. And we spoke about revenge before. Revenge in relationships, not good. Okay? Such stories that have happened, I'll pull one out for you in a second, but such similar things are a person obsesses over a guy, he may be seeing someone, people look at each other's diaries, get to their BlackBerry, start looking at their email accounts, a lot of this obsessive behavior. Okay? This is not good and not healthy. I once had a couple here, I have to speak in code because we're on film, who were involved, and he had joined websites where he was looking for a certain type of ethnic ladies. Was that okay? To date, and he was living with his girlfriend at the time. And she started to go onto the computer and found this information without him knowing. So what she did, well, this is a true story, if you have some of the stories, which, so what she does is, she decides to go on to this website and apply to be one of these ladies, though she isn't of this particular ethnicity, and she goes on, And he finds her, which he planned obviously, and they start dating online. Him thinks he's actually seeing someone who's, it's a true story. He thinks he's speaking to someone from this ethnicity, and she knows full well. And he's like spreading all this stuff to her. Like, does it get crazier than this? So they have this double life. They're like at home, living together, planning a wedding, and they're also having this online relationship which she doesn't realize he's having with her. Can you hear the problem over there? are we like, did I miss something? And when this was described to me, it was out of that matter of, yeah, so this is what I'm like, do you know how insane this thing is? He has no idea. He's in Cloud Cuckoo Land. He's got no idea. And she's living this double life, and she's okay. She's like, well, you know, at least he's not with someone else. I'm like, he is, but it's not you. But he thinks it's you. I don't know. I'm lost. It's obsessive. It's not good. She ends up making a date with him. He ends up being there. She takes a cab. So he turned up. Whatever. Okay, so this is what happens. And it happens with parents as well. Many parents will not want to see their kids get married. Okay, and they will go out of the way to actually pull the plug on a relationship. You would have thought, what, parent? But those parents who have obsessive relationship with their kids, who need their kids, you may know such people in your families, who need their kids, right, to be there and fill in their empty void, which the parents very sick, that every time they bring home someone, not good enough, not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. We're going to talk about this later on, but actually according to Judaism, if your parents say this person's not for you and you want to marry them, you're allowed to marry them. But there's a law on your mother and father. We'll see later on, when it comes to relationships, you're allowed to make your own mistakes. You're entitled to do that. That's a Jewish law, by the way. Unless the person you want to marry breaks other Jewish laws, but that's separate to your parents' agreement or disagreement. I found this article that really sums up the pinnacle of obsessive and sick behavior. And this was in the Associated Press a couple of years ago and came out of Houston, Texas, which I guess is full of this stuff. Suspecting her husband of having an affair, Clara Harris did what wealthy wives can often do. She hired an investigator. So basically, she thinks her husband's cheating on her, she gets a PI. But what the private eye saw could actually become, and did actually become, Exhibit A against Harris, Clara, herself. What happened? As the investigator's video camera rolled, trying not to laugh, an enraged Harris, so basically they're filming this guy, allegedly killed her husband in a parking lot by running over him three times with her silver Mercedes-Benz and leaving the car parked on top of him. The victim, this is not funny, the victim's 16-year-old daughter was in the passenger seat. That was good for her. She'll be in therapy the rest of her life. It was an accident, Harris, a 44-year-old dentist, told reporters after her arrest. Okay, three times and landing on top of him. Hard to be an accident. It's like, hey, it was suicide. Okay, the episode happened outside a hotel after Harris confronted her orthodontist husband, David, got into a screaming fight with the alleged other woman. Obsessive, unhealthy. I mean, most cases do not end up over there. However, what happened was after obsessively moving in from phase 1 to phase 8, and just described to you, she ended up having to take drastic action. Other similar stories may have heard of a guy comes home, and there's a lot of fantasizing of how to hurt and revenge each other. People may not do this kind of stuff, but they definitely plan on it. You know, the case of the guy comes home to find his closet and all the clothes ripped and torn in half. I know a case of someone who took out all, she suspected him, I think wrongly, by the way, of having an affair, took all of his very expensive suits, put them onto the front lawn and set them on fire, came home to suit bonfire night at his house. I mean, this is, okay, these are extremes, but this, if it keeps going, this is where it ends up. Right, the fantasizing of revenge. Okay, that's the bad news. Let's create for ourselves a healthy love relationship. What is it going to look like? Okay, we know what it doesn't, we don't want it to look like, but is there a view in Jewish life, in Torah, in Jewish thought, of a healthy love relationship? The answer is yes. And I believe there is no coincidence that people who affiliate with a religion, any religion to be fair, but I'm not talking about Judaism because I am a rabbi, have a much lower chance of getting divorced. That's statistically true. And when I say affiliated, I don't mean too much. I mean like going to temple once, twice a year, maybe an occasional class, I don't know. Right? Maybe eat a bagel because you're Jewish, right? Not just because you're part of the holy people. I've done before, haven't I? sorry. Yeah. But statistically, it seems to be that people affiliate with something bigger themselves, some purpose, some role, have a much better chance of being in a healthy relationship. So let's do it right now. And let's try to define a term which I haven't discussed for the first four classes, and that is love. We didn't discuss it, if you remember, the first class about relationships. The word love never came up. And trust me, it didn't come up in the hatred and anger thing. It didn't come up in speech. It didn't come up in control. But now it does. And it's really the end goal of all relationships. It's not the beginning. Remember that love at first sight was the beginning of an unhealthy relationship? Therefore, in a good, healthy relationship, it's your end goal. Let's define it and let's see why that's going to be. If I were to ask you, if you don't mind, and you can answer this, tell me something you love. What would you say? What do you love? You can ask that question. Shoes. Who said that? I appreciate your honesty in doing that. Shoes. Yeah, Melvin Marcos right here. I respect that. Yes. Anybody else? You like music. Yeah? What else do you love? If I say, what do you love? What do you say? Someone says, you're on a date. Right? What do you love?
Friends.
You love your friends. That's nice. Any else? What else do you love?
Food.
Any particular food?
All food.
All food, right? Anything that goes into the mouth, right? Doesn't come out again. Give me an example. Chocolate, pizza, hamburger, just the smell of it. Right, the pizza, I tell you, you can just melt cheese on anything, it's going to be good. Right, just the smell, the carbohydrates, walk past the store, it goes in, all the endorphins get going. They did, I have an article I read this week, interestingly enough, those who want to see it, I can email it to you. They've started to research into why people become love addicts and love obsessors. There's a lot of research into this. They found that when they start doing brain scans of men, I don't know why I did it of men only, but of men who see a very attractive woman or get involved in that kind of, should we say, behavior, they do brain scans, and they found the same part of the brain that triggers for drugs, alcohol, crack, meth, also triggers when they see certain female images and when they get involved in certain acts within relationships. It's the same part of your brain. It's as addictive, this love thing, this obsessive thing, as a good meal, as a food, as anything else that gets that addictive part of your head going. That means, when we talk about obsession, you can become addicted to a sick, nasty relationship, and just as hard as it is to quit smoking, and to quit crack cocaine, not that I ever have, or to quit any drug, it's the same thing. I'm going to say the same for women as well. From my non-scientific, observable rabbi position, getting out of a relationship is as hard as quitting any of those illegal or even legal substances. It's just as difficult. So I asked you what you love, and you gave me fair answers. We said shoes, and we said food, and music. I once gave this class, and there was a guy who, when I asked this question, I said, what do you love? He said, Rabbi, was a married guy, I love fish. I said, what? He said, I love fish. He said, Thursday night at my house, my wife, delicious, makes a beautiful salmon, maybe a tilapia, I love fish. I said, no, you don't. He says, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. He said, yes, I do. I said, if you love fish, you wouldn't catch it, kill it, gut it, skin it, cover it with your favorite herbs and spices, put it in an oven on 350 for 20 minutes and eat it. You don't love fish. You love what fish does to you. But that's not love. That's loving yourself. You like shoes and you enjoy putting them on. But that's not really how we're going to define love. Because if you define love that way, if you don't mind picking you for 1 second, if you define love that way, then your boyfriend's got to fit into that shoe thing. He's got to fit just right. Yeah? Otherwise, it's not going to work. Right? The shoe's got to fit. Otherwise, I don't want it. That's not love. You enjoy wearing shoes, you like buying shoes, I'm sure, and you like music, and you should. You don't love music, right? You like it, but what you're saying is, if you say I like food, shoes, music, or anything else, you're basically saying I love myself, and I love what those things do to me, but that is not the idea of healthy love, that's obsessive love. Can you see the difference? Can you see how we've turned around this idea of love as to what makes me happy? I said to this guy, you make it out to your fish, how would I treat your wife like that? 350 in the oven for half an hour, that's not a good way to express love in a relationship. Then what is? How's it meant to work? What is the idea of love in Judaism? So the idea of love, as I've mentioned before, but I'll mention it again, is defined in one very special Hebrew word, and that is ahava. Someone said to me, ahava, isn't that a cream? I was like, love cream, doesn't sound so good. But yes, that title has been taken by a certain pharmaceutical company in Israel, but it also means something. And not to appreciate anything, as we mentioned before, is to look at the Hebrew word that describes it and understand it. And we're going to do that right now. Hebrew word is ahava. And every Hebrew word, as you know at this point, you should know, has a shoresh, a root. If you get to the root of that word, as we said before, you will understand what that thing is. And the shoresh, the root of the word ahava, is to
give.
It's to give. If you give, you love. Obsessive relationships, make it very simple, is about taking. And a good, healthy love relationship is about giving. And we live in a world of taking. I mean, let's take a classic love holiday, Valentine's Day. And the advertisements are all the same. If you love her, if you really want to make her happy, out comes the De Beers commercial. Ever know De Beers? And I'm like, oh yeah. Because she wants that 3-carat diamond earring. And it's like, carrot? Isn't that a vegetable? Oh no. Oh, you're going to find out. Weight, clarity, size, cut. Women have been obsessing about this since they were children. We men have no idea. You realize that, guys, by the way, don't you? Let me tell you a little secret, which I discovered having 4 beautiful daughters. From a very early age, women see themselves getting married and being princesses. And see, not all women, but many of them, see themselves one day under a chuppah. I guarantee, ladies, no man says, one day, I'm going to be a big boy wearing a tuxedo under the chuppah with a rabbi. They just don't have that fantasy. It's just not in their area of understanding. It's not who they are. So along comes Valentine's Day, and she wants that gift. You're like, okay. So instead of the 3-carat diamond earring, what does he buy her? A 0.5-carat each ear. That's it, baby. You're dead. I was like, go home now. Just break up the relationship while you're still alive. You haven't been scalped. Get out. Okay. So you come home and you give her the gift. Now, according to the way it's sold to us on the TV, there's the shadow with the earring hanging on it. I should get constant love, because that's what the men want, remember. I want constant love and affirmation. I did this for you. Now you have to give me the love that I deserve. And we're like, no. That's obsessive, unhealthy relationship. Will she love you for the 0.5-carat diamond earring? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe she expected 3-carat and 0.5-carat is pfft. But one thing I will guarantee, and this is the key point to follow, this is the punchline. If you give her something, or she gives you, or whatever, you will love her. Meaning, in Jewish life we say that the love follows the giving. If I give somebody something, I will love them. How much? Depends. Depends how often I give, how much I give, why I give, when I give, how I give. That's going to be a question. But one thing's for sure. The equation works. If you give somebody, you're going to love them. So in Judaism, we happen to say, be very careful who you give to. We're not Hare Krishnas, we're around airports. Hi, I'm a rabbi. Come dance with me. I love you. We're very careful who we give to and how we give to them. We set up very strong boundaries, not walls, but boundaries around ourselves. Because if I give too much, I'm going to love that person. Now, let's talk, we're all adults over here. Okay, well, most of you are adults over here. So let's talk details. Now remember, the equation is very, very simple. God will not create a world that is so difficult to follow. If you give somebody something, it doesn't have to be a person, by the way. It could be an idea, a cause, a company, a university, it's all the same. If I give myself, my time, my love, my energy towards that thing, I will love that thing whether I like it or not. If that person's only taking, what happens? It's not a relationship. You need 2 gives. If one takes, one gives, you get resentment. If both take, it's divorce time. It's all over. So here we have a situation where we know that giving equals love. Now let's say, and I mentioned this example before, I'll say it again. You have someone who is giving, 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 and the other person takes, 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 takes. Well, let's take a specific example. What's the most precious possession that you own? Erica?
A
Amanda, the most precious possession you own. I picked on Jonathan enough. I'm letting him off this week. It's the girls tonight. What's the most precious possession you own? Yeah, a tangible item that you own. Sarah, the most precious tangible possession that you own.
Does a dog
count? A dog?
Like your animal.
You know what? An animal could count. But I'm going to talk for 2 minutes on animals in a second. But I'm going to tell you something more precious to you than your animal, and that's you. Amanda, you, your body and self, is most, we don't even think that way, unfortunately. Eric, would you agree with that? You would give up most possessions in your life, right, to know full well that you are going to be okay, healthy and well? So let's follow this carefully. If the most precious possession you own is you, and you give you to somebody else, and that person just takes, whether it be emotionally, psychologically, physically, then don't be surprised when the next morning you as the giver are completely upset, broken, and crushed when you are abandoned, and he or she is able just to march on to the next thing. Why? Because you gave. The more you give, the more you love. That means if you want to be in a good loving relationship, a healthy one, there has to be an element of giving. But if there's too much giving and the wrong time and the wrong thing, that's going to lead to problems. Please share this with your children. That's why, by the way, the Gemara says most beautifully that a mother loves the child more than the child loves the mother. Why would it say such a thing? It's true. And we know it. Inherently. But why would that be? Because the mother gives. The mother in her nature is a giver. First of all, she had the baby for 9 months in her stomach. There is no greater giving than that. There is no more painful, unpleasant. It's a wonderful thing. Wonderful. But it's a really, I mean, right now, thank God my wife is pregnant. Thank God. I'm very, very grateful. Shout out to her. Thank God. And she can't sleep. I mean, it's not so bad because I can. But she, right? I'm like, shut up with her screaming. You can't be in the right position. It's so difficult. Right? So before you even met this creature, you've given 9 months of your sanity, sleep, life, and body parts. You know, ever wonder this? Where does the baby actually fit inside the stomach when it gets to like 7, 8 pounds? That the other organs are actually being shifted around, including the bladder and colon. There are repercussions to that. Like, whether you realize or not, that's a mother giving her child, in this case, space. I know one woman who told me she's got certain children. She said she won't have any more kids because she doesn't like the invasion of her privacy. I have a problem with that, by the way. I hear it. That's why men don't get pregnant. Because men need their cave, right? Men are like, you can't get away from this. This baby's like, you know what? I just need a break. And you go into my cave right now and deal with my own stuff. Could you like get out for a couple of weeks? I just need a break. You know what? It's not you, it's me. It's not you, baby, it's me. I need this baby. You're great. You're fine. You're okay, just can you get out? There'd be no babies in the world. There'd be 3 people left in the world. Yeah, 2 gay men somewhere. You know what I'm saying? The whole thing will be like completely broken. It's got to be because the nature of them. So as soon as the baby turns up, she loves the baby. What's she love the baby for? You never met this little creature that looks like E.T. Right? I suppose oh, it's so cute. You liar. That's not cute. A 2-day-old baby, little squashed grey thing. He's like an alien. Right? But you can't help but love it. Because you've given to that creature. And the older they get, the more you give. And children, as you realize by now, have to learn how to give as well. Because if kids are takers, you're in big trouble. That's why don't be surprised when you see the average spoiled child that gets everything they want from A to Z. The Xbox breaks, get them a new one. PlayStation, whatever it is, goes away, buy them a new one. And they turn around at 16 and despise their parents. I get it. I gave them everything they wanted. Because that's not how you create a loving being. We know the formula. The kid has to learn to give. If they just take, they end up hating you. Just like that guy who just took, hates you. Just like that boss who just took, hates you. Just like that girlfriend, that boyfriend, that college professor, that sports team member, whatever it is, it's the same formula. Relationships are relationships are relationships. And here's one of my favorite sayings. It's on my Facebook page. If nothing changes, nothing changes. Relationships do not fix themselves by themselves. Something's got to give. And people will go a long way to avoid this giving principle. Have you seen people in bad relationships will change jobs, and change house, and change location, and state, and country sometimes, in order to find themselves? If I get a new job, everything will be good. If I lose my job, everything will finally be good. When I finally graduate from college, everything will be good. When I finally get back into college, it's going to be good. When I finally get married, everything's going to be good. When I finally get divorced, it's all going to be good. It's constant obsessive thinking that if ABC, but they don't focus on themselves. And another famous statement of mine, wherever you go, there you are. Which is why this young girl who had five relationships that all broke up with these nasty, evil, cheating men, or whatever, they'll be number six. Because it ain't about them. It's about you. And that's painful to hear. And I don't like to say it, because I've been the victim of it as well. I've also been in terrible relationships, but they are fixable. And how do we do that? So the answer is pretty simple. We follow the very simple equation. Right? Just like E equals MC squared. I mean, I have no idea what that really means. I mean, I know what it stands for. But all I know is this massive brain called Einstein could summarize one of the biggest theories in the world with a very small, simple, and beautiful equation. We just like, it all comes down to that. And for that, he became the smartest person in all of history. So maybe God created the world that it's not rocket science. Maybe it is simple. And maybe the simple idea is, if you want to be in a good, loving, healthy relationship, then you need to find a person who is giving. And you need to learn how to give. Tell you a quick story. If I mentioned this before, I apologize, but we're doing a lot of classes here. It's all mushed up into one. I think I did mention, I apologize. I'll say it again. It's about to get married. So I went to my rabbi for advice. I actually went to a bunch of rabbis because I was terrified. Terrified of being married. Right? For my community, I was very, I was 28 years old. That's 28 years of me. It's all about me. And suddenly I was going to turn the me into us and the I into we. And that's a big change. As I said in the dating class, I think, turning the personal into us is very, very, very tough. Right? Because dating, as we said then, I'm not going to go into it again, is not marriage. Actually, they're two complete opposites. Dating is there to establish this person with the potential to be a loving individual. And as I said in the dating class, which got a lot of gasps, for an adult in the mid to late 20s, shouldn't take them more than 3 to 6 months to figure that out. 3 to 6 months, that's all you really need. To figure out the credentials for a good, healthy, love relationship, how much time do you need? 3, 4, 5 years? Got to move in together as well? Only makes it worse sometimes. So I started dating my wife. Oh, my girlfriend, whatever, at that time. And I'm about to get married, and I'm terrified. So I go to my rabbi, and I said, any final piece of advice before I enter into this state that's called marriage? And I went to someone, by the way, who, and this is, should be obvious to you, who's got a very good marriage himself, right? Are you with me? In other words, just like you wouldn't go to, I'm hoping, right, smoking advice, how to get a smoking from someone who's, right? You want to go to someone who's in a good, healthy relationship? Hey, to get advice about relationships, should be obvious, right? For some reason, it's not. So he's actually in a really good, healthy marriage. It has been for many, many years with children, grandchildren. So I went to him, and I said, so, what's the secret? And I had a lot of secrets, a lot of stuff I managed to incorporate into my life and share with my students. And he said one thing only. This girl you're about to marry, she's the queen. That's how you have to see her. Picture every day with royal robes and a crown on her head. She is the queen of the relationship. It's a very powerful image. Stayed in my head. So she went in to see him as well. He had to discuss a couple of things with her. Things of worry about me. And they spoke. And then we left. So we got mad eventually, and terrified. Got mad. And we're about to get into an argument once, and I felt we pulled back, because first year of marriage, you should know by this point, is major argument time, very, very tough. Just like a new pair of shoes that goes on and pinch at first, and then smooth and become better. So to marriage, at first it pinches, and after a while you're like, wow, how could I ever live without shoes, right? That's which one, very much the shoe thing. That was for you. So I tell him, and we're schmoozing, we're talking, and I said, so why exactly did we, so we communicated, a good thing, and she said, I'll see something interesting. It's what that rabbi, Rabbi Braun, this rabbi, he told me before when I went to see him, I said, yeah, what did he tell you? He said, there's one thing you've got to remember, that guy you're about to marry, he's your king. You've got to see him every day wearing a royal robe and a crown on his head.
Imagine going through life like that. That both partners see each other as the king or queen. And here's a secret for men only. I'll tell you what every woman needs. You can get away with a lot of garbage in life if you can prove one thing to your spouse. One thing. You can get away with ball games and nasty habits and socks and underwear in the kitchen sink and scratching yourself with your keys and drooling and unhygienic behavior, not taking a shower from Friday to Friday, as I call it, coast to coast. You know what I'm saying? Get away. Get away with a lot of garbage if you could do one thing. It's a secret. Guys, you owe me $1 million for this piece of information. You've got to make her think. Even if you don't, you've got to make her think that she is your number one priority. If you can do that somehow, you will get away with so much more. That my job is nothing. My soccer, my football, my baseball is nothing. Those guys I work with, I don't want to go out with them. I want to be with you. But I've got to go out with them because my job needs it. But I want to be here with you right now, sitting down, talking about your shoes. I want to be here. I want to see every outfit you have on you. And I want to tell you how none of them make you look fat. That's what I want to do. By the way, there is no answer to that question. Does this make me look fat? Right? That question, guys, by the way, here's something. There is no answer. Well, actually, there's only one answer. You're perfect just the way you are. Okay? My answer never works so well. Does this make me look fat? No, that doesn't make you look fat. Your fat makes you look fat. That, by the way, not a winner. Doesn't work. Don't know why. Tried a few times. It was painful. Don't know what happened over there. You're perfect just the way you are. You owe me, guys, all you boys, you owe me $1 million for that. I've saved your life. Priority number one. That's all they want to hear. Girls are conky. They want money. They want to know this. They want to know that. You get to get away with a $15,000 job a year, right? Watching Oprah in Doritos all day, as long as she feels, and you get away with it. You could be the ugliest. Have you seen those girls? Those beautiful girls, right, with hideous-looking husbands, like my wife. Have you seen that? Like, how the hell does that jalub, right, who's just like further up on the evolutionary scale from an amoeba, end up with a girl like that? I'm going to tell you the secret. He makes her feel like she's number one priority. That's all there is to it. It could be as simple as that. And that takes work, time, and effort. And that's a form of giving. Buying the gifts may not help. She may not want it. Are we both givers? So that's how we're going to define it. So a healthy relationship is not based upon obsession or compulsion. Here's a little quote from a good book by Dr. Jonathan Paul from Conflict to Caring. You are able to nurture others in a way, healthy relationship, which promotes their emotional and spiritual growth and promotes their taking responsibility for themselves, thereby increasing their self-esteem. In other words, this person is not there to fill in your missing hole, but your job is to help them to learn how to take care of themselves. Can you hear that? It sounds complicated, but it's really simple. Basically, you have to be there to help them become who they're meant to be. And that is what a healthy relationship is all about. It's summed up right there. My job in life is to help her become the best she can be, and your job in life is to make him become the best that he can be. And then he's nurturing in time and effort. Oh, yes. Wait, you're the best sportsman. Why you can't make a single team? I don't know. They don't know how good you really are. That's what you're there for. Or it could be, you are lousy at baseball. And that's okay, because I can take criticism. Because I'm here to improve myself. And don't take it too personally. I mentioned this before, I'll say it again. Do not take criticism too personally in a relationship. It can destroy you. Okay? There's a famous saying from the sages. If someone calls you a donkey, put a saddle on your back. Don't criticize you. Go with it. Don't take it personally. If a wife asks a partner to buy groceries on the way home, and he forgets an honest return, she's like, you always forget to do what I want to do. I always remember the groceries. How come you don't remember? Now, he, instinctively, because the best form of defense is attack. Like, I wasn't well today. You will always have to do these things. Spiral, down, down, down. You're like, you know what? Screwed up. Sorry. And she'll go on a bit, and work it out, and pinch each other, but it kind of works out. So that's criticism. Really finish. 2 more minutes, can you handle? Set up boundaries, not walls. It's a big, powerful distinction I heard from one of my teachers. In a relationship, you need healthy boundaries. But walls are not good. My boundaries connote that's something I can move, right? I can give it over here, but I'll take over there. It's a flexible reality. If you're in a relationship, I spoke to a girl this week, true story, she was engaged to a guy for a year and a half, which already I think is insanity, right? But we'll leave that aside. She was dating this guy, and this guy was of a certain a family persuasion, should we say, because parents will do the whole thing on that, I said to you. But such that the guy had, he just set up, if there was a problem, a wall was put down. He's like old school kind of thing, from a certain community. And he put a wall, and she was very American, he put a wall down, there was no budgeting. It just wouldn't break. She just wouldn't give. There's no flexibility there. Like you put your hand against it, it broke. It can't work that way. Was it right? He needs to find life light. And by the way, here's another thing people say to me, well, someone's got to be with him. Someone's going to marry him. Someone's going to marry her. I'm like, okay, just not you. Just not you. Okay? Boundaries, good. Walls, no. We did anger already. One final thing about physical intimacy, which guys put a tremendous emphasis on, when it comes to marriage relationship, ends up being less. Physical intimacy, right, as you know it as sex, in Jewish life and in the Torah itself, the Bible itself, refers to, anybody know? As yedia, knowledge. Knowledge. In order to have, it's a very deep idea, in order to have good physical intimacy, one with each other, by the way, I've never, pretty much never seen a divorce over, sex wasn't good. On TV they say it's not true. Right? It's usually a symptom of an emotional blockage that is maybe manifesting itself in that realm. Assuming a person is healthy, of course. That's usually what happens. It's known as knowledge. If you get to know someone, that act becomes a whole different reality. If not, it just becomes taking. Okay? Infatuation, chemistry, romance. And having a good time are nice, but they are more important in dating than in marriage. It's interesting. The first time we see marriage and love in the Torah, I didn't mention it before, I'll mention it right now, and we'll finish with this because it is late. Rabbi Ari is ready to come on deck. However, we see the marriage of Jacob and Rachel. And it says the following. It says, first of all, he worked for many, many years in order to marry her. First of all, they met, they moved in together, and then they fell in love. Can you see that? I mean, now we do the exact opposite, right? First of all, we fall in love, then we move in together, and then finally we get married. We're actually doing the exact opposite of what Judaism is telling us to do to have a healthy, long-term relationship, which we Jews call marriage. And the Hebrew word for marriage, we did love us to marriage as well, we didn't mention it up to now, but let's say that's the goal, hopefully we're all going for, is kiddushin. And kiddushin is how the Hebrew word for marriage, the word is kadosh. This is the source of all holiness. All of it. If you want to find holiness in your life, sitting on a mountain, meditating, right, with a sheet like a jubu. There's Jewish Buddhists, you know those guys? Right? Putting on a sheet and meditating all day. I don't think jubus do that. Light candles and an orange sheet. I don't know. It's not going to work.